And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller, and I'm joined today by...
Nikola Mitulev.
Nikola, I can't believe we were talking, and this is your very first time on Channel 9.
It's my very first time on Channel 9. This Week on Channel 9, but completely on Channel 9. First time. I'm a newbie.
That's unbelievable. Yep. So let's actually just spend just a quick minute. What do you do on the team?
Well, I'm what's called an Xbox One evangelist. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the first Xbox One evangelists. My job is to work with the Xbox One teams and our partners to make sure that they're completely familiar with the tools that we have for Xbox One so they can develop their applications.
That's great. And so big milestone obviously coming up next
coming up
month
November.
Here. So you've been pretty busy.
Exactly. Yeah, very busy working on a lot of NDA stuff.
Yep. Yeah. NDA means confidential, so I won't ask you a lot about it today, but thanks for spending some time with us. Let's jump right into our top story, which we don't usually talk about pricing on This Week on Channel 9, but I thought that this one was particularly interesting because of the special upgrade pricing for Visual Studio 2013. So if you are a customer of Visual Studio 2012 and you have Visual Studio 2012 Professional, you can pay just $99 to get upgraded to Visual Studio 2013. I'm not sure how that translates to other local currencies around the world, but you can go click through to read all the details.
Yeah, and Visual Studio 2012 just came out last year, so this is a great way to just upgrade to 2013, but I'm paying the whole premium.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And so next up we have this, we think it's called Ryujet.
Ryujet, or... Yep. Ryujet.
Oh, yeah, it could be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
But the .NET team has announced that they have a new just-in-time compiler for .NET in the works, and they have actually released a non-production version of it that you can install it on your machine, actually run it and try it out. It is targeted for 64-bit machines, and they say it's about 50% faster than the JIT 64-bit compiler that they have right now.
That's huge leaps and bounds. Yeah. That is huge. So obviously a lot of technical details on this post. Mm-hmm. I frankly don't understand half of what they're talking about here. But you can go read about it and you go download the CTP. Yeah. And the team is looking for feedback too. So you should run it against your code bases if you have a chance to do that. And then send them your results so that they can make it even better. Next article here is data access for highly scalable solutions. So here in the United States, this week we actually launched the new healthcare exchanges that are part of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, one and the same. A lot of people don't realize that. But there have been a lot of stories in the press over the fact that some of those systems are running really slowly. And I was listening to a story on the radio that talked about part of the reasons why. And part of the reason why is that when they are putting together the checks to say, okay, Nikola, you are a 20-something male, you're looking for this type of coverage, they have to run it against a lot of different offers on the back end, and it's really just a data crunching problem. And so I like this story, getting back to our story here, which is that the Patterns and Practices team published guidance for creating highly scalable solutions, and that could mean using relational databases, graph databases, NoSQL databases, so a variety of different approaches here, and they try to break it down for you so you understand what the best approach for you might be. In case you happen to be launching your own healthcare exchange on a global scale, or just building, you know, the next social media website or whatever, so I think that's cool.
So yeah, the next story that we have is a post by Abraham Kivanich and our technical evangelist at the MEA. He's posted a PowerPoint that basically walks you through how to start developing apps for Windows 8. So it's a great roadmap.
8.1.
8.1 and Windows 8 too.
Okay.
So he has a whole roadmap from getting started with learning how the template works, getting started with how to design for Windows 8, and then he has two different roadmaps for if you're already familiar with Windows 8, here's how to get started with Windows 8.1. If you're not familiar with Windows 8, here's how to get familiar with some specific of Windows 8 and then go jump into Windows 8.1. And it's a great, great PowerPoint. It walks you through where to find all the samples. It walks you through where to find all the blog posts about Windows 8 development, how to find the websites that we have for designing cool apps for Windows 8. And it's just a good resource for if you're just getting started or even if you've been developing for a while, there's some resources here you might not even know about.
Yeah, I like this. We cover similar stories like this in the past. I like the way that, number one, he kind of forks the road based on whether or not you're already on Windows 8 and coming to 8.1 for the first time or if you've never built an application. So So nice set of content there, and lots of links to follow. So this is something that I wasn't aware of at all until we had a conversation this morning. Nicola, what is WebView?
So WebView is something that's already been available for Windows 8 in terms of writing C# and XAML applications, but it's not something that HTML and JavaScript developers have had when they were developing Windows 8 applications.
Okay.
So with the release of Windows 8.1, we now have a WebView for HTML and JavaScript applications.
So what is it, though?
This is huge. I mean, before the HTML JavaScript applications, you were able to use the iframe, but there were a lot of restrictions. You weren't able to load some local content properly. Mm-hmm. There were some restrictions in getting some sites to actually load because they have some restrictions in loading in an iframe, so they actually wouldn't render. So the WebView actually solves all these problems, allowing you to load all these websites. It's basically just a web browser inside of your applications. And it gives you a lot of different events that iframe didn't give you. So you can know when the website's been loaded, when you've navigated away from the website. You can capture all these different events. And what's also nice, you can actually get a screen capture of the website and get it as a bitmap and actually use it in your applications, for example, with the share charm.
Okay, so you've got this app that's wrapping the web browser, and you can do data interchange between the two of them and grab the bitmaps. Okay, all right, so that's cool. So this is brand new for HTML applications. Speaking of HTML applications, we have a how-to article here. This is Bootstrap. We've talked about Bootstrap in the past, but for people that might be new to the idea of Bootstrap, what is Bootstrap, first of all?
So Bootstrap is a framework designed by the Twitter guys. They've designed this framework, this HTML5 and CSS framework.
In just 144 characters. They made this entire framework. It's amazing.
It's a little bit more than 144 characters. But it's basically a very great framework for designing very responsive websites. Mm-hmm. And it just gives you a framework for organizing your data very beautifully on a website that works in multiple different sizes. And then Bruno here talks about how to actually get the Bootstrap on your websites through Visual Studio, through NuGet. So he walks you through the whole process of getting started with a website, adding some content, and then getting the framework from NuGet and then including it into your project. It's a very straightforward forward post by Bruno in Spain.
Okay, sounds good. So next up, we have Web Essentials for Visual Studio, Open Data Made Simple. We've talked about OData a lot in the past. This is kind of a different approach to bringing OData endpoints into your Visual Studio application. So how does this work?
So this is actually talking about how to use some of the open data that a lot of governments actually have made it available for a lot of customers. So they have open data
Census numbers.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, so this is all free data that people can just go ahead and access. And sometimes it's just in XML format where it's static, or sometimes even make it dynamic. And a lot of people have actually done a lot of applications for it. But when you go and you make your applications, you want to make sure that you have the data structures in your applications that can support these open data formats. And then what Web Essential does is basically allows you to automatically generate these classes, these form from this data. Mm-hmm. All you do is just copy, let's say, a JSON string and paste it into your project, into a CSS file. And this Web Essentials will actually create the classes for you automatically. So you don't have to worry about the names. You don't have to worry about the syntax. And it's all ready for binding. So you can just use it and just create the UI for your
application. That's cool. Yeah. Paste JSON as classes. That's cool. I didn't even know that existed. So another thing that I've always wondered about, this is a breakdown of task.run versus background worker. Mm-hmm. And so this is an article by Stephen Cleary. And he basically goes through all the ways in which you would work with task run and background worker and tries to compare the two of them. Mm-hmm. So what was your takeaway from this?
Well, this is actually, I love this post because it's very, very introductory post and about creating actually background work and working on a thread. So if you're not familiar how to do that, actually this not just compares the two different ways of how to do that, it basically walks you through, this is how you do it, this is how you handle errors, this is how you handle progress reports, this is how you handle cancellation. It's a very straightforward series that you can just go through and learn exactly how to do threading in your applications.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good. So this is another post from a friend, Tony Goodhue. Tony was my mentor back when I very first started at the company. And one of the things that Tony is responsible for on the Visual Studio team is the start page. And so he has this kind of reflective post, Visual Studio start page through the ages, going all the way back to visualstudio.net, which is a 2002 release, and all the way forward, of course, to Visual Studio 2013. And he kind of talks about some of the directions they've taken the start page over the years, some of the things that they've done in the latest release of 2013 and 2012 with some of the videos that are included there. And he wants your feedback. So he's asking for people to weigh in kind of on how do we make the start page better for the next release of Visual Studio. So that's very cool. Which brings us to Picks of the Week.
Picks of the Week.
You know to get excited when the Picks of Weeks happen, even though if you haven't been on the show yet.
It's the best part of the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my Pick of the Week, this is actually a visit that I took earlier in the week to what's called the Microsoft Archives. So do you know about this?
No, I haven't known about this.
Yeah, so the Microsoft Archives is actually on the Microsoft campus here in Redmond. It's over in Building 126. And my brother and I, he's also, Danny is a Microsoft employee. He's been on the show
before. He's on the Xbox team, right?
He is on the Xbox team. That's right. Yeah, he and I went over there, and we spent about an hour just kind of looking through the archive, and it was really cool. It was full of every single product box you could imagine that we've ever shipped, every piece of swag, T-shirts and coffee mugs that I've ever seen. They had an Altair there, and they had Trash 80s. They had just a whole bunch of different computers.
Some old hardware.
So you go into this room, and it's temperature controlled. It's actually pretty cold. It's like 55 degrees Fahrenheit, and it just has shelf upon shelf upon shelf. It's like that last scene in Indiana Jones and the Lost Ark, and you just see just like rows of shelves.
No end.
No end. And so my very first job, a lot of people know my first job at Microsoft was I was the product manager for J Sharp, which is no longer an active product, and I was wondering like if I could actually find J Sharp. And sure enough, for some reason, they have it on the very top shelf, which I didn't quite understand, but I had to get a ladder, and this is a photo of me pulling a copy of Visual J Sharp off of the top shelf. So my pick of the week, and this is what...
Don't you have to wear gloves for this? I don't see you wearing any gloves.
It is still in the shrink wrap, so I think it's safe. And there's actually a second copy there for redundancy.
You didn't take any souvenirs with you?
Any souvenirs. In fact, I've been thinking if there's anything that I can actually bring and file away in the archives for them, because they're always taking suggestions of donations.
Okay, great. And my pick of the week is this new library called PhysicsJS. So we have, as hardware goes stronger and faster, we have a lot of JavaScript libraries coming out. And this is a beautiful library that just came out for have a physics engine. And if you go on their website, you can actually start playing with a lot of demos they have. And it's just fun to play with it. But the specifics of it is this is just a library you can include in your projects. It's a strictly JavaScript library. It's very small. Just the core library is only 31 kilobytes. Just minified, and it's very small. You can just load whatever data you need, and it's also modular. So if you have a different algorithm for collision or for any other part of the physics engine, you can just replace it in this library, and it would just work. So it's a great library to include in all your designing games, even if you have applications that have some cool animations and physics.
So here's our challenge to the viewers. If you can implement Grand Theft Auto 5 in PhysicsJS, then I will send you Nicola's shirt off his back. So by next week, of course, we need to have this done. So
by next week.
So good luck with that. But Nicola, thanks for being on the show.
This was great. Thank you so much.
Good luck with the Xbox One launch, and we'll be excited to talk to you more once you can share some of these top secret things you're working on.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.